Thank you very much, Judith. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to be with so many friends and colleagues in the room. I want to quickly make an additional note about the production of the UNDP guidebook on using competition law to promote access to medicines. Very instrumental in that project was Judith's predecessor, Katie Kirk. As many of you may know, Katie Kirk died suddenly and unexpectedly after heading on mission to Ethiopia for UNDP about 2 years ago. But I'd just like to invoke her memory. She played a very important role in getting UNDP started on access to using competition law, as well as the UN high-level panel on access to medicines. So I've been encouraged to talk at a fairly high level of generality because there may be people in the room who aren't so familiar with competition law, but I'm going to mainly not follow that imprecation because I think actually there is a high level of expertise in the room. And at least the second part of my presentation will be devoted to some fairly technical issues concerning competition law doctrine. But to start with, in a fairly quick overview of the current situation, we know that the global pharmaceutical market is characterized by multiple failures, political, economic, regulatory, scientific, which requires that we use a competition law which is not a unidimensional. And by unidimensional, I refer to the focus on elimination of producer constraints, because this is if we go back to early U.S. Supreme Court jurisdiction on jurisprudence on competition law, in the early 1900s, the cases were really directed to the protection of consumers. So if you read the early Supreme Court case, Standard Oil, you'll see that the focus of the court was on the impact that the conspiracy or the combination of trusts would have on prices and how that would affect consumers. In the mid-1980s, the United States really shifted through the influence of the Chicago School and Robert Bork to emphasizing the self-correcting nature of markets. And the general theory of the Chicago School was and remains that if you eliminate restraints as between producers and create a competitive producer market, that will induce competition and lower prices and ultimately benefit consumers. And this Chicago school, for better or worse, continues to permeate discourse on competition law, both in the United States and the international level. And why this is important, we'll revert to that a little bit later. But the key point I would like to make is that where markets are characterized as the pharmaceutical market by legislatively authorized grants of exclusive rights, whether that's patents or exclusive marketing rights, removing constraints as between producers does not result in lower prices to consumers. You actually have to go directly at the higher prices themselves, which will referred to for the sake of argument as excessive pricing, and refer back to that. To talk a little bit about trends, there's a tremendous amount going on in this area, certainly since UNDP started its active work on competition law 5 or 6 years ago. Perhaps just a little bit before that was the EU Competition Directorate investigation of the role of patents and other market exclusivity mechanisms. And, of course, the U.S. Federal Trade Commission really worked on those issues, even preceding what the EU did. And the EU is continuously monitoring and challenging patent settlements. The Dutch government is in the middle of an investigation on the pricing impact of patent extensions and regulatory exclusivity rules. The EU Competition Directorate has opened up what it refers to as a unique investigation into the pricing practices of South Africa's Aspen Pharmaceuticals, and it specifically refers to excessive pricing as an exceptional circumstance. The major, the leader in excessive pricing investigation is the UK Competition and Markets Authority, and I'm going to come back to that because that's the specific doctrinal issue I want to discuss in more detail. The Italian Competition Authority also has been quite active, including finding Aspen guilty of excessive pricing and imposing fines. The French Competition Authority is in the midst of a pharmaceutical sector inquiry. Some colleagues of all of ours involved in the Dutch Pharmaceutical Accountability Foundation have just asked their competition authority to take action against Ledient Biosciences in respect to excessive pricing. The South Africa Competition Commission, as we mentioned, as has been mentioned, has opened up a large-scale investigation in the health sector, a very complex investigation. For those involved in the IP policy, its development and implementation, competition law is factored significantly into that. As Umanya mentioned as well, there's other actions currently under review in South Africa. And among other things, UNDP hosted a multi-country consultation in Pretoria back in 2016. One of the most active competition authorities is the Chinese competition authorities, and there's actually three agencies in China that work on competition matters, MOFCOM, the NDRC, and the SAIC, and they've been quite active, including both in the ordinary restraints of trade and in excessive pricing. We can go into some more detail about what all of these people are doing, but this is just basically introduction. The Competition Commission of India is doing a baseline study of the health sector. They had opened an investigation on Herceptin. The status of that isn't entirely clear. A very active competition authority in Malaysia, the MYCC, UNDP hosted, again, a consultation for the ASEAN countries about a year ago. They've just produced a pharmaceutical sector study. A lot of the groundwork in that was done by TWN, and they've also just are in the process of developing guidelines on IP and competition, in which UNDP has also submitted comments and participated. And then in December of last year, we also conducted a large consultation in Latin America in Rio de Janeiro with, again, a number of people in this room. And so in that consultation, we had presentations by every competition authority in Latin America on what they're doing. And so, you know, these are trends in 2 minutes. We're not at this stage really going into precisely what they're doing. Some of the bigger, more interesting cases going on right now, the state's attorney generals in the United States, and there's also a criminal investigation by the Department of Justice against a broad range of generics companies. And if you were going to write a case book about restraints in the pharmaceutical sector, you only need to read the detailed complaint of the state's attorney generals against the generic sector. Restrictions of supply, extensive text messaging and meetings about fixing prices, rigging bidding to the pharmaceutical benefit providers, informal meetings, actually referred to as girls' nights out among the pharmaceutical producers to have discussions about price fixing. And so this is going to be really a major case, and a number of the companies that, again, many of us have liked to think about as friends of the access movement are very heavily impacted by this competition investigation. I won't go into this, but, you know, the powers of the Canadian Patented Price Review Board have been recently upheld. The most active prosecutor of competition cases is the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, the Health Antitrust Division here in Washington. And I really have to give a lot of credit to this group because they are fighting against Big Pharma. They are working persistently, being fought every step of the way in every case, all the way through appeals to the Supreme Court. If again, you want to see the worst types of human behavior, read the settlement in FTC v. Mallinckrodt and the excessive pricing of a liver treatment for children. It's just horrific to think that a group of adult human beings could engage in conduct of that type, and the FTC got a major settlement against them and a compulsory license for the medicine. Recently won a case, at least at the district level, of sham patent litigation against AbbVie, that its lawyers knowingly and willfully secured patents and used them in paragraph 4 litigation to prevent the entry of generics and a $400 million plus fine. Again, just to briefly mention, you now even have, I call it bio on bio. This is Johnson, Pfizer against Johnson & Johnson, alleging abusive behavior in restricting the right of health insurers to provide reimbursement for biogenerics. I'm not going to go into details, but that's a current case. Now I'm finally getting to the point of my presentation. So so this is what I regard as the single most important competition action going on today, which portends to have very significant implications. And this is the Competition Market Authority in the United Kingdom against Pfizer. And the CMA had made a determination against Pfizer for excessive pricing in a case involving something called phenytoin sodium capsules. These are an older anti-epilepsy drug but used by almost 50,000 patients in the UK. And it was a very low-priced drug. And it was kind of a unique setting, a therapeutic setting, because it's a drug that it is risky not only to switch to a different drug, but it's even very risky to shift between a capsule form and a tablet form, and it is preferable to stay with precisely the same formulation, and that was the recommendation of their medicines board. So what Pfizer did in this case, they could have negotiated a price increase with the National Health Service, but they decided that they wouldn't get enough of a price increase. So they decided what they would do was engage in a process called debranding. And this is a more or less unique British process. It engaged an intermediary called Flynn, and it transferred its marketing authorization to Flynn and then entered into a contractual purchase relationship with Flynn. But because they didn't transfer the brand of the brand name drug to Flynn, but only the marketing authorization, under British law, this took the drug out of the price control system and allowed them to price the drug however they wanted. And what they did then between Pfizer and Flynn was they raised the price of this anti-epilepsy drug by approximately 2,500%. So the cost of the NHS went from £2 million to £50 million in 1 year. And that change persisted. And in the course of the investigation and the discussion, the Pfizer executives literally talked about what is the public going to think about our fleecing the NHS during a time of budgetary crisis in the UK. So this was, in a way, kind of the worst case scenario in generic price manipulation. And the Competition and Marketing Authority So now we have to understand a little bit about the United Brands case, but we'll just do really quickly. I don't know, even if I have a minute, but 3 minutes, okay. So what the CMA said was, well, in the United Brands standard, which goes back to the late 1970s and the Court of Justice of the European Union now under what is now Article 102. The EU always does us the favor of changing the numberings of the treaties to make everybody crazy. But anyway, they made a cost-plus determination of the benchmark price of what the drug price should reasonably have been, and then they looked at that cost-price plus price and then looked at the price that Pfizer and Flynn were charging for the drug and said, we have no difficulty concluding that that price is excessive, right? That the 2,500% price increase was excessive, in particular because Pfizer showed no reason why there should be a price increase. They're providing exactly the same drug from exactly the same factory in exactly the same formulation, so there was no reason for a price increase. But under the United Brands standard, there's a second prong to the legal analysis. You not only have to show that a price is excessive, you also have to show it is unfair. And you can show, so unfairly excessive. And you can show it is unfairly excessive in one of two ways. You can either show it is excessive and unfair in itself, or you can show it is unfair in comparison to other competitive drugs on the market. But the European Court of Justice made it very clear that only one of those tests need to be satisfied. So in the United Brands case, again, which is the main jurisprudence of the European Court of Justice, you've got a two-prong test. The Court of Justice specifically said that cost plus is the best mechanism for establishing a benchmark, number one. And number two, you can show unfairness in one of these two ways, which I won't repeat. The decision of the Competition and Market Authority, which goes to 550 pages and is in excessive technical detail, rejects, validates the finding of dominant position by Pfizer and Flynn. So they controlled the market, and consumers didn't have a realistic alternative. They were locked in. But it rejected the excessive pricing determination. And it rejected the excessive pricing determination based on an opinion written by the Advocate General to the court named Wall, and Wall citing Justice Scalia in his Trinco opinion in the United States said that if you reduce producer constraints, markets are self-correcting, and excessive pricing really isn't a thing, but because the CJEU has said it's a thing before, I'm going to agree that it's a thing, but it's a thing that's very difficult to prove. And he went on to say that it's not only required that you prove it in the way that the CJEU has said you had to prove it in the past, but I think you should perform multiple analysis on each prong, even if the test has already been satisfied by the prong that was laid out by the Court of Justice of the European Union. So that wasn't accepted by the Court of Justice in what that Advocate General opinion was for, the Latvian copyright case, which in fact set a lower standard for excessive pricing. But trying to compress this all, the Court of Appeals, the Competition Appellate Tribunal, relying on Advocate General Wall's opinion, said it wasn't enough for Pfizer to use a cost-plus formula for determining whether the price was excessive, and it wasn't enough for the competition authority to show that the price was unfair in itself because Pfizer provided absolutely no justification for the price increase because everything stayed the same except the price, and even went a step further and said the drug is cheaper in every other European market, which presumably would have even satisfied the second prong. but that the Competition and Markets Authority should have done something else, even though it couldn't quite articulate what that something else was. Now, why am I mentioning this? Why do I say this is the most important case? Well, with UNDP and others, I've met with competition authorities in, on every continent, and, well, I don't know, Antarctica, if that's a continent or whatever. But and the group of people who are the main competition authorities and competition judiciary study the same cases. They tend to think a lot alike. They tend to very much like the jurisprudence of the European Court of Justice. And I would say, quite importantly, the South Africa Competition Act is expressly modeled on the decision in the United Brands case. So South Africa took that multi-pronged test and put it into its Competition Act, and its competition tribunal looks to the jurisprudence of the European Court of Justice in making its decisions. And it is a fairly conservative tribunal, all things being equal. So we had the Hazel Taw case. That didn't go up to the Competition Tribunal in South Africa. But there are some big cases coming down the pike, potentially, including with respect to anti-cancer drugs. And when they go up to the Competition Tribunal, because I don't think the companies are going to let them lie now, they're potentially going to be confronted with this evolving, potentially conservative jurisprudence on excessive pricing coming out of the United Kingdom and potentially even out of the European Court of Justice. So there's other cases. Again, for me, the key antitrust doctrine for access to medicines is excessive pricing. Because, again, to reiterate, if you're looking at patented medicines and exclusive marketing right granted medicines, the companies probably aren't engaged in intercorporate collusion or restraints of trade. They are using a legislatively granted authority to charge a price which is beyond a reasonable price, an excessive price. And unless you can go after excessive pricing, which incidentally you really can't do in the United States, so we'll leave that aside, but I'm hoping to change that before I die, but probably won't. You have to look at a complex analysis under patent law. So I apologize if that was more technically detailed than perhaps it should have been, and maybe we can come back to it, but I just want to be aware that there's a lot of positive stuff going on in this field, but there's also some considerable risk from a doctrinal standpoint that competition authorities are confronted with. Thank you.